At Verizon, anyone can trade in their old phone for a new one on us with Unlimited Ultimate, which means everyone in your family could get a new phone and stay on your family plan, keeping you close.
Hey, Mom, you seen my toothbrush?
Yeah, I'm almost done with it.
Oh, maybe too close. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
Over the past 75 years, more than 10,000 chemicals have entered our food supply, but the EU allows just 300 additives. At Thrive Market, we prioritize quality, banning over 1,000 ingredients found in conventional grocery stores. Our Healthy Swap scanner helps you find better versions of your pantry essentials without the junk, dyes, or fillers, and everything is delivered right to your doorstep. So shop at a grocery store that actually cares about your health at thrivemarket.com/getstarted for 30% off your first order and a free $60 gift.
Live from a bunker in the heart of the Ozarks, a podcast that is ready for Scarlett Johansson to be its OS voice this year, it's SIFPOP. Welcome to SIFPOP, available in your podfast keyed. In the podcast feed every Monday, unless, of course, you're a patron.
It's Laffer Herberg.
That's right. Laffer Herberg. I'm your host, Aaron Dicer, and he's still anxiously awaiting a Morbius 2 announcement. It's Andrew Ormsby, ladies and gentlemen.
Ahoy, fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed. And his New Year's resolution is to rewatch the entire Air Bud series. It's John Paula, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, glad that you, and I'm glad that you remembered and clarified rewatch, because I, as astute listeners will already know, I have already watched all 26 once through, so that would be a rewatch for me.
That is just absolutely amazing.
And to be fair, I did that before I had kids. I watched that just as a single adult man. My children did not join me on that.
I was looking at 2025, the year in movies, and thinking of what we might anticipate if there was a movie that took place in 2025, and Her takes place in 2025. And so it's just interesting to me because, and whatever it was that 2014? I don't even remember. It was somewhere in the early teens, I think.
2013, to mid-teens. I believe.
Yeah, somewhere in that range, you know, and to think 12 years in the future, we'll have conversational assistants that will be our, and it's like, yep, here we are. But we all kind of knew Her was pointing in the right direction of the future. But yeah, it's just interesting that 2025 is the year of Her.
I'm not wearing high-waisted pants yet.
No, not yet. No, the fashion doesn't quite doesn't quite work out. We are anticipating more than just what movies' futures might be. We're anticipating the actual movies that we think, fingers crossed, will be coming out in the year 2025. That's what we are doing today. And we've got a lot to get through, so I'm not going to stall a lot. However, part of what I want to do is look back what the three of us thought for 2024, kind of revisit what we anticipated and kind of give an overall, how did that live up? I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, but if before I kind of go through some specifics, if either of you have general thoughts on how 2024 lived up for you to your anticipation, I would love to hear them. John, what about you?
Yeah, so I just pulled up my list from last year, and most anticipated, I was looking forward to Dune Part 2, lived up to the hype. That was awesome. I did see that opening weekend. Deadpool 3, I saw that opening weekend, also lived up to the hype. I had a lot of fun with both, and different expectations, certainly. And then my third most anticipated was Horizon 2 from Kevin Costner, which I don't even know if that got released because part one flopped so badly. They were originally going to do dual theatrical releases 6 weeks apart. And I remember on this conversation a year ago, hyping up like the balls it took for Costner to do that, to basically mortgage himself to the hilt, to do back-to-back features like that. And I was so excited because it signaled to me that he was really confident. It was a really great picture. And then the first one came out, nobody liked it, or maybe not enough people liked it. And I immediately lost interest, and I haven't even seen the first one, let alone still excited for the second. But I'm holding out hope that maybe it'll find a second life on streaming or Paramount Plus or something like that. But Of the movies that I've seen on my most anticipated, I'm still catching up with the stuff that came out in the fall and at the end of November, December. I think Challengers, Fall Guy, Inside Out 2, those were all really fun pictures. And I liked them a bit. Argyle was a disappointment, and I regret picking that as my pick for February.
Andrew, some of your general thoughts?
I can't remember what my list was at the moment right now. But I do remember that I was very excited for Dune Part 2. John is typing away like he
I have your top three in front of me, too. I was going to go over those specifically after you guys' general thoughts. But yeah,
I just feel a little unimpressed with 2024 when it came to my list. Besides like one or two movies that I was like, wow, that lived up to the hype. And Dune Part 2 was one of those movies.
It was.
Yeah.
It definitely lived up for me.
Yeah, it's a good year for us. We all were anticipating Dune 2. And in fact, it did win our official pick last year as the most anticipated movie. And I think we all felt really good about that result. Andrew, your picks, you had Civil War was your number one most anticipated of the year.
Yes, that lived up to the hype.
I agree. I love Civil War. I thought Civil War was great. It was my number two. Then you had Deadpool was your number two and Dune was your number three. So you and John both had Dune and Deadpool. The Horizon thing's interesting because, John, you said a lot of people didn't like it. I don't know that that's the case. I just don't think it made any money.
Yeah.
Nobody went and saw it. Yeah. The people who saw it actually have at least most of the ones that I've talked to about it have at least a middle of the road to enjoyment of the film. And I'm one of those defenders. I think the film is actually really good. And I would other than the very weird, 3 minute surprise trailer at the end, next time on Horizon Part 2 thing that happens at the end. Other than that, I really had a good time. So I hope Costner figures it out. It's clear he's telling a big story and wants to tell it theatrically. So we'll see how that works out for him. But yeah, it's kind of all up in flux right now on that one.
I do remember the show last year that I specifically said, I want to wait until Part 2 comes out so I can go back to back in the theater and do like a movie marathon. And I think as soon as the second one was canceled, that like all the wind came out of those sails. And I was like, oh, forget it now. I don't want to bother.
Yeah. Some other general thoughts throughout the year for me. There are a few that were on my official list of 15. We all get 15 that we pick that did not come out last year. So you may be seeing them again. One of those was supposed to come out last March.
Yeah.
Bong Joon-ho's movie Mickey 17 was supposed to come out and it's not coming out till this year. Then there was also what was the other one I was looking at?
Wolfman.
In October, Wolfman was supposed to come out. Lee Winnell's Wolfman movie was supposed to come out, and that
it's
didn't
January
come out.
January now, right?
So, yeah, I believe that's coming up this next month. So, yeah, so there, it's always interesting how that kind of stuff happens, how stuff gets pushed. Probably of my most anticipated, I think Dune 2 was probably the biggest success, although Inside Out 2 was also a huge success for me.
How did If live up to your expectations, Imaginary Friends?
I think it lived up to my expectations. I was anticipating it, and I thought it was fine. I didn't like love it, but I really enjoyed it.
Fair enough. Two quick things I wanted to mention. I was originally excited to see The Karate Kid now, December 2024, and that got pushed back to next year. When I was looking over my list, I saw that I had in one of my – I don't think I was a runner-up, just an honorable mention for Project Artemis last July. And I'm like, I don't even remember what that was or why I was excited. And did it come out? It was renamed to Fly Me to the Moon, that rom-com sort of alt history with Channing. I'm like, oh, yeah. And I did see that. And it was kind of cute. I didn't even remember that it had a title change. And that's why looking back at these lists is very unique, because you get a snapshot in time of movies that were going to happen, Horizon 2 and didn't, and other movies that got renamed, and others like Mickey 17 that got pushed back 14 months.
Yep.
Because that's coming out
in April, I think.
Yeah.
And we will get to April. Here's how it works. We're going to get right to it. We got a lot to go through. We're going to go through every single month. We will start by each picking One anticipated movie from the month. So we will all have at least one from every month. So that's 12.
Are right? we allowed to overlap? Then, we all have to pick the same movie? Or should they all be?
Yes. Oh, absolutely. Okay, okay. We're absolutely allowed to pick the same movie. Then we will each have three wild cards. They can come from any month. You could have four movies in one month on your list. You could have your official one and all three of your wild cards in the same month if you wanted to. You also, if you want to pick something that isn't dated, that is possible. If it's expected for 2025 but does not have a date yet, you will have to use a wild card on it, but you can pick it. So those are kind of the basic rules. Once we get to the end, we will all say our top three most anticipated movies, and then we will pick the official most anticipated for SIFPOP for 2025. Now, the process we define most anticipated by could be summed up in the sentence, if you had these movies in front of you right now, the movies of 2025, which one would you, and you could only put one in the DVD, the Blu-ray player, which one would you pop in right now that you just have to see? That's how we're defining this. The one you are most excited to see. It's not necessarily the one you think will be the best. It is the one that you just can't wait to see. Get it in front of my eyeballs right now. And that's how we do most anticipated. So we will kick it off with...
And as I think I've clarified on the show before, often for me, I prefer the worst of the two movies first. If I had a choice between watching, we discussed last week, like Casablanca or, say, Air Bud, I'm like, you know what? I kind of don't want to think tonight, and I'd rather just watch Air Bud 4 where he plays volleyball. Like, that's kind of my mood most nights, so...
But you've seen Air Bud 4 and you've seen Casablanca. In this case, we are talking about movies unseen. So,
correct.
Adds a little bit of a twist. Let's get into it. We'll kick it off with January. Just a historically plethora of amazing movies come out in January and September, the big movie months. What do we got? Andrew, you're going to kick us off. What is your January pick?
I am going to go with the Mel Gibson directed film Flight Risk.
Yes. Right on.
I am mildly hesitant, actually, about this movie, but given that it's such a barren month, there's a lot going for this movie. Again, the Mel Gibson directing aspect of this, but this is an unknown writer, Jared Rosenberg. And just from the screenshots that I've seen, I think that the receding hairline, this is going to sound weird, but I think that the receding hairline that they put on Mark Wahlberg is going to be very distracting while watching this movie.
I have not seen any pictures of that. That is interesting.
No, I haven't either.
Yeah, well, I would just say don't look it up. But the, oh, but the no, premise look of it up. The...
oh, no, he looks terrible. Oh, my gosh, what have they done?
Yeah.
Oh, no. Oh, my gosh.
So, now you know what I mean. But I think here's the IMDb synopsis for this. It's a plot or a pilot transports an air marshal occupying a fugitive to a trial. That's all I'm going to say. And then things go awry on the flight.
And brutal graphic violence ensues.
Yes.
Sorry, I just Mel Gibson directed it, so I assumed there would be some brutal.
Yes, very
violence.
Brutal and violent. Yeah. But yeah, it's it looks like it's going to be a very interesting movie.
I agree. I had it on my list of choices. John, what about you? What's your pick?
Yeah, this Flight Risk was my number one. I have a huge soft spot for airplane movies. I love stuff like Nonstop or Red Eye, Flight Plan, Air Force One. I just actually there's something about that confined, claustrophobic atmosphere, especially for action movies, that really brings them to another level. I've loved Mel Gibson as a director for 35 years now. And while Hollywood might have him in the doghouse, I'm okay to separate art from artist. And Marky Mark, I think, is dependably really good in these types of roles where he just kind of has to quip and punch. And maybe get a kiss at the end of the movie. Like, this is not going to be deep. But it's going to be the kind of movie that I will really enjoy whenever it comes to streaming.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that one, too. But the movie in January that I most want to get in front of my eyeballs right now is Steven Soderbergh's Presence. I am... I am a huge Soderbergh fan. I think he's a genius storyteller. I'm always intrigued because he makes such different kinds of movies. I never know what I'm in store for with him. I also love structurally how smart he is with his movies. And this is a psychological thriller, I think, which is one of my favorite genres. I'm excited for a psychological thriller haunted house story from Steven Soderbergh coming out next month. Would be my number one for the month.
If I remember correctly, this is a haunted house movie told from the perspective of the haunter.
Oh, interesting. I didn't know that.
So and he Soderbergh actually has two movies coming out next year, Soderbergh.
He sure does. Hold that thought, Mr. Paula. He's prolific, man. It's so interesting to follow his career because I forget what year it is. He was like, okay, I'm done making movies. You know, like I just, you know, have said what I want to say or whatever. And so he moved to television and did a show called The Nick, which is phenomenal. And then after he did that, he was like, I'm going to start making movies again. And he makes like one or two a year. And he's just like, I'll just shoot it on my iPhone and show you one of the greatest things you've ever seen. And it's just like, he's so prolific. I think he doesn't get caught up in, you know, kind of the friction of the movie making process in the way that some other,
he's very like workmanlike. It's, you know, product before all, let's just get it done. And he doesn't, unpretentious, I think, would be a great way to kind of describe his sort of
Eastwood's
catalog.
The same way.
Yes,
it's kind 100%. Of the same way Eastwood shoots, you know?
Yeah.
That's the one I'm most looking forward to. Also mentioned, Den of Thieves 2, probably worth mentioning, and Lee Winnell's Wolfman is coming out in January as well, which was on some of our lists last year.
And the animated theatrical adaptation of Dogman is one I know my seven-year-old is really looking forward to seeing. She's a big fan of the cartoon and the comics, and seeing that on the big screen, I think, will be a good birthday present for her.
Yeah. All right, let's head into February. That's right. I pronounced the R. We are going to look at a few things here. John, what about you? What's your most anticipated for February?
A lot of intriguing options in the doldrums of winter, but I got to be a simp for Marvel and just go with Captain America: Brave New World. I mean, Harrison Ford's one of my all-time favorite actors. I love the Captain America sub-franchise within Marvel, and I think this is the big sort of passing of the torch. We got it with the show, but not as many people might have watched the Winter Soldier and Falcon show. So the Brave New World, which reportedly had massive reshoots, they like redid half the film, pushed it back a year. Could it be good? Maybe. Will it be a disaster? Also, probably. But I don't care. I'm very intrigued by this one. And I'm fingers crossed it's good and Marvel can maybe get, you know, recapture some of their success from the earlier phases because they have been, I don't want to say on a losing streak because Deadpool and Wolverine made so much money, but I feel like critically they've been missing more recently. And yeah, Harrison Ford.
Oh, they're on a losing streak.
Yeah, but Harrison Ford as president in a Marvel movie like I'm in, like I just, in my own headcanon, this is just James Marshall from Air Force One who gets to turn into Red Hulk, and I want to see that.
Nice.
I'm nice. Basic.
I'm right there with you. That is my most anticipated for February as well. I think Marvel is at such an interesting point because there was the immediately after Endgame, where it was like, okay, can we do this again? And I think there were three or four movies that year, and then another, you know, whatever happened in that phase with Shang-Chi and, you know, those movies. And then it was just like the pandemic was like, we're just going to kind of screw with your ability to really have any kind of timeline here. And they tried the TV thing. And it just got to be this muddled mess.
Yeah, it was diluted completely.
Just completely diluted. What are they doing? And then last year, it was just Deadpool. And that was it. And, you know, Deadpool is kind of its own thing. You wouldn't, you know, it played in the universe. In fact, that was part of the fun of it. But it's kind of its own thing. So I am really curious about Brave New World and what this movie is and what it says about where Marvel is heading.
Would it be fair to say that this is a make or break project for Marvel?
No.
Or is that overstating
I don't think so. That's overstating it because they've got two big toy boxes that they're about to open up. Those are the make or breaks.
If Fantastic Four also kind of flops, then they might be in trouble. But I think
until
this is
X-Men, until X-Men yeah. flops. Yeah, there is no make or break. They've got that Trump That's card fair. in their hand. So, yep. Andrew, what's your most anticipated for February?
It is not that. I am going to go with Love Hurts.
Nice. I saw this as well.
You know me. I love trailers. And today and yesterday, I went on a trailer binge to get me ready for today. And good. I got to tell you, Love Hurts was a very intriguing trailer. I had no idea about this movie. Has a pretty interesting cast. Ki-Hui Kwan, Ariana DeBose, Sean Astin, and Reese Darby and Marshawn Lynch.
Yeah, Marshawn immediately got my attention comedy. On that cast list.
Yeah, the trailer looked great. It looks like it's going to be led by Ki-Hui Kwan, which I'm really excited about. The guy just deserves a big one, so that's why I'm really excited about this. February 7th is when this one hits. And the director is first-time director Jonathan Eusebio. He was like a stunt coordinator for like Fall Guy and Black Panther and all these movies like that. So I'm expected the action to be good.
Yeah, I love Kehei. And I think putting Kehei, who had for 30 years in the middle of his career between Indiana Jones and winning the Oscar for Everything Everywhere All at Once. He was a stunt coordinator. He was a stunt guy behind the scenes. He worked with Hugh Jackman on the X-Men films. So to see him in front of the lens doing stunts in like a pure action movie, not just in action sequences, I think is really intriguing. So yeah, this was one of my runners up for February. Excited to see that.
Absolutely.
Just
the people
involved. I just realized this stars Ki-Hui Kwan and Ariana DeBose. Ariana DeBose was the one who gave Ki-Hui Kwan his Oscar at the Oscars.
Oh,
remember,
yeah.
she was nice. Crying and stuff? Uh-huh.
And in that moment, they were like, let's do a movie together.
Yeah.
And that's how it started. It's official. Breaking news here. Printed up in all the blogs. The other choices for February that we could have looked at, Scott Derrickson has a movie called The Gorge that looks pretty interesting, and I like Derrickson's stuff. Paddington in Peru, of course, I'm going to be excited to see another Paddington movie. Osgood Perkins, who you may remember did Long Legs, and is Anthony Perkins' son, has a movie called The Monkey that looks like it might be interesting, although based probably outside my interest realm. Daisy Ridley and Martin Campbell directing The Cleaner looks like could be a fascinating movie. And then Paul W.S. Anderson adapting a George R.R. Martin story called In the Lost Land, starring Mia Jovovich and Dave Bautista, at least has my curiosity. So
the George R.R. Martin is the only part of that that I'm kind of interested in. You lost me with Paul W.S. Anderson and some of
Batista. You're not interested in Batista?
No, I think I'll skip this one. But there is a movie you did miss that I want to mention because it was almost one of my wild cards.
Yeah,
it is called Last Breath.
Yes,
okay. Stars Woody Harrelson and Simu Liu, and it looks great. I don't want to get too much into it since it wasn't one of my picks.
Last Breath was based on a documentary that came out a few years ago, which I watched this summer. And it's a revelatory documentary. It is the kind of thing that kind of like blew my socks off. Great story, great interviews. And it's the kind of like harrowing true account that's like, I can't believe this is real. And then they're going to turn it into a dramatized, 90-minute feature, which I think will lend itself very well. Because the documentary is like almost all interviews. Like you can't really show what's happening under the water. It's like an underwater survival film. And really, really interesting to see that adapted. Looking forward to it.
That is February. Let's move into the spring, shall we? Let's talk some March movies. I'll kick us off on this one. There are a lot of combinations of director and actor that I've loved through the years. One of those top combinations is Ryan Coogler and Michael B. Jordan. And Coogler has a movie coming out called Sinners that Michael B. Jordan is in. I want to see it now. Coogler is an incredible director, and they have done some incredible work together. So I am excited. That is my choice.
I think that I have that coming out in April. Did I miss that?
Did my thing have it at the wrong point?
I have it as an April 18th release, and I thought we were still on March.
It's March 7th is what I have it as. March 7th, 2025 really? Is what Google says.
Well, that's what I get for trusting Wikipedia, which says April 18th.
Actually, on Wikipedia, it also says...
actually, no. I'm looking here. It says April 18th for Sinners.
On Wikipedia?
No, on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yes. But both Google and Wikipedia's official release date... document say March 7th. So
I think that's in the UK. Which
nope,
date?
This is USA.
What? I don't understand. Well, you pick it now. I'll talk about it next.
That's right. And this is going to happen sometimes. Like, you know, it's one of those interesting things where sometimes when I'm not sure, I will like get a second. You know, I need like I'm in spotlight and I need my second source or something. Yeah. But this case, two sources either let me down or let you down. I have no idea. I currently have a March 7th, 2025. There's probably no trailer for this, is there? I was going to say would.
For Sinners?
Yeah.
Yeah, there is.
Does the trailer
right
have
now.
A date?
Let me play the trailer.
March 7th.
Skip to the end. March 7th.
Well, there you go. Yep. I'm wrong again.
I feel vindicated.
You should.
I will tell you, I have found, and I think I sent you guys a link to that sheet. There's a Wikipedia list of
American films.
Annual releases that American films that updates pretty regular on the regular. So,
that's what I got my list from was okay. That Wikipedia link that you sent in the email.
Okay, good. Yeah. Anyhow, Sinners is my official pick. Ormsby, what's yours for March?
I'm going to make an action comedy thriller pick. I'm going to go with Novocaine. Nice. This stars Jack Quaid, who we know from, what's that show? The Boys.
The Boys.
Yep. This looks like an interesting
Star
action.
Star Trek Lower Decks.
Mm-hmm. Yes. It's about a guy whose girlfriend gets kidnapped and he goes to get her back, but he's not like an action hero or anything like that. He's just a normal guy, but he suffers from a condition, which I think is called SEPA, where you can't feel pain. So it's him going to save his girlfriend. And basically it's him just getting hurt the entire movie, but he doesn't feel it.
Now you
it looks
the
really funny. Jack Quaid. Yeah, I did. And Jack Quaid looks hilarious. I like the guy. Looks like it's really well shot. And it looks like it's going to be interesting. Not like, I'm just going to get shot a bunch, like in this new remake of The Crow. You know, he just gets hit a bunch.
Mm-hmm.
But it looks like it's going to be clever with its action, which I'm excited about.
Nice. John, what about you?
For March, another sort of blockbuster slop pick from yours truly, because I just love that junk food style cinema. I have to go with The Electric State, which is the big Q1 release from Netflix. The Russo brothers are directing a huge cast that includes Millie Bobby Brown, Chris Pratt, Kehe Kwan, Jason Alexander, Woody Harrelson, Anthony Mackie, Brian Cox, Jenny Slate, Giancarlo Esposito, and Stanley Tucci. To be fair, a lot of those are voice-only roles, but still a huge cast. And I've liked the Russos. I thought The Gray Man, one of their, you know, post-Endgame projects for Netflix, was better than I think the general reception had, you believe. But this is, because it's on Netflix, I'm guaranteed I'm going to watch this like the night it comes out. I don't have to leave the house. I think that barrier of entry helps. But Chris Pratt, Millie Bobby Brown in like some big budget sci-fi action adventure that, you know, Netflix dumped $200 million in advertising into is... according to Wikipedia, which we literally just proved is not very accurate, says that this movie carries a $320 million budget, which is – that's up there with like those bloated COVID James Bond releases. So hopefully this is good because it seems like they're going all in on it. And those movies are usually at least worth watching, even if they're not always great.
It was on my radar for sure.
Yep, definitely on my list as well. Anybody have a wild card in March? I forgot. I should be asking that. I assumed nobody had a January or February wild card, but I will ask that after we've done our official picks. Seeing no hands, I will also say Soderbergh has another movie coming out in March. He has a January release and a March release. Go, Steven, go. It's called Black Bag, and I am certainly curious about that one. It's the new Snow White, which is written by Greta Gerwig. So that has my attention. It's not directed by her, but it is written by her. Mark Webb, I think, is directing that new Snow White film. Barry Levinson has Alto Nights, which this is the part, I think we've mentioned this one before, where De Niro plays two roles, two different gangsters. So that one certainly got my attention. And you know what? When David Ayer makes a movie, I'm going to pay attention because I've really liked some of his stuff. And he has a movie called A Working Man coming out, starring Sylvester Stallone, in March as well. That caught my attention.
Those on my list too.
So, yeah,
it didn't look all that good.
I didn't. Andrew Stallone hasn't done anything good in a long time.
Andrew, it may not be good, but let me just say, the faith you put in understanding the quality of a movie from a trailer astounds me. There have been way too many.
It was my job.
There have been way too many examples of great movies with terrible trailers and terrible movies with great trailers. Even if I watched them, for me to put a lot of stock into whether or not a movie was going to be good. Look, it's David Ayer directing Sylvester Stallone. That's all I need.
Okay.
So
I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. I'm just saying there's an added element that I've seen.
So does he have a receding hairline that just ruins everything?
It's really going to be distracting, like really bad. Yes.
That is March. Let's go to April, which is now known as the month that Ryan Coogler Sinners does not release in.
Yeah.
What did you guys have in April, John?
This is where I slotted in Mickey 17. Following up Parasite, I'm going to watch anything that Bong does next. And also the synopsis for Mickey 17, if I can pull it up quickly and share it, which, of course, I can't find it now. Is it not in April anymore? Did they move it from April from when I made this list to just now? Oh, my. Oh, my. I hope not. Oh, now it's in March.
Yeah, me too.
They moved it up. All right. Well, it depends.
According to the Wikipedia article, is that what you're talking about?
According to Wikipedia, Mickey 17 is now a March release. But when I researched this yesterday, it was coming out in April. So I'll just talk about it now.
April 18th.
All right. Well, whatever. Whenever this comes out, it's April a science 18th. Fiction, black comedy.
I think we lost John.
Oh.
Are you still there, Andrew?
I can hear you, yeah.
Okay. We lost John.
Can you hear
John,
me still? You back? Yes. Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes. You're back.
Okay. Good.
You're back.
Okay.
Yeah. According to the Wikipedia, it got moved up to March now.
No, it's April 18th.
I'm looking at it right now.
I am too.
I just clicked the link that this is going to be so fascinating for all of our listeners. This is probably going to get cut out. But I clicked the link, the list of American films 2025. And it says
three hours ago.
You slacker. How are you not up to date, Aaron?
Hey, you want to hear something funny?
What's that?
It swapped its release date with Sinners.
Sabotaged. Anyway.
Wait. Did John edit this? Is that what's going on? Did John update this?
Went into Wikipedia to sabotage myself. So Mickey 17, the latest from South Korean director Bong Joon-ho, Robert Pattinson, and a bunch of other names, Mark Ruffalo and Toni Collette, Steven Yeun, Naomi Ackie. This is a science fiction black comedy film, which is such a cool and perverse mix of genres, which is sort of what Bong is known for, right? Taking different styles and mixing them together, kind of twisting them on their heads. And he's always done such a great job with that. And he kind of has a blank check in Hollywood now that he's won a few Oscars for Parasite. So I'm really excited. I don't know a lot about it, but science fiction, South Korean, like, all right, sign me up. This is going to be good. Whenever it comes out, April, March, doesn't matter. I'm excited.
Last March, who knows?
Yeah, right. It was supposed to.
That is my pick as well, even though it apparently is a March movie now. That is my April pick. Andrew, what about you?
Yeah, it was Mickey 17. So,
all right. So we all picked an April movie that comes out in March now. Congratulations to us.
Yes.
Still in 2025. So at least there's that. Any wild cards from April for you two?
No wild cards, but there's some interesting stuff coming out in April.
The only other one I cared to mention was the Minecraft movie, because that movie is going to make billions of dollars.
You think so? You think it'll make a lot?
Whether good or not.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
It's going to make...
Write it down. 12/27, 2024, as we record this, Aaron Dicer says the Minecraft movie will make billions of dollars, and it will.
Listen,
I'm an old man, but I am not underestimating the power of generations that play Minecraft. Like, it is insane. It is their Star Wars.
Yep. You're probably not wrong. Else, Andrew, I have no interest in seeing it, but good for the kids.
Yeah. Me either, but I thought it was worth mentioning.
A video game that I played a long time ago on PlayStation called Until Dawn is getting a film adaptation, so I am excited for that.
Is that the Choose Your Own Adventure one?
Yeah.
I've played a little bit of that one. I really enjoyed it. Maybe I should finish that game. Maybe I should pick that game up again.
Not to toot too high of a horn and up it too much, but it is my favorite PS4 game ever.
I really had a good time with the bit I played of it.
Yeah.
Imagine me playing video games. All right, so let's move on to May. This is where things typically start getting really, really interesting and the wild cards start flowing. John, what's your official pick for what are we in? May.
I have to go with Mission Impossible, The Final Reckoning. The much anticipated and renamed direct follow-up to Mission Impossible 7. This is reportedly going to be Christopher McQuarrie and Tom Cruise's final outing in the Mission franchise. I don't believe them, but for now, we'll have to take them at their word and assume that this will be the final chapter for Ethan Hunt. And if that is true, I suspect they will go out in grand, glorious, practical stunt style. So I'm going to be, you know, firmly seated for the opening showtime on May 23rd, the week before Memorial Day. I loved all seven of the previous films. Even the second one, I think, is pretty solid. So, yeah, I can't wait for Mission Impossible.
Yeah, I'll throw my name on that one, too. What about you, Andrew?
Same. It's even though I wasn't as, like, I didn't love Dead Reckoning as much as the last one. Before it, I mean, but
it's still really good. Even like
Mission
a lesser,
Impossible. How yeah, can
even
you
a lesser
not
mission
eat?
Film is a really good film.
Yeah, I mean, I still liked it, but I still think that Final Reckoning is going to be like one of my most anticipated movies of the year.
Yeah. Yep, I'm very excited for it as well. Dead Reckoning, if you remember, was our 2023 most anticipated movie of the year. You know, clearly, Dead Reckoning had mixed reviews from the people in my life and also from critics, I believe. I loved it. I thought it was a great, quote unquote, part one. It should have just been called Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning from the beginning and without the part one. Yep. And I think that's the way to title these things when you have kind of a two-part complete movie that you're, you know, a complete story that you're trying to tell with two shorter stories inside it, instead of calling them A and B or part one and part two. So take that, Dune. You should have done better with your naming. Anyways, I like that one as well. So that is all our official picks. Does anybody have a wild card that they want to pull in May? John, with the first wild card pick. What do you got?
I cannot express how excited I am that the Final Destination franchise is roaring back to life on May 16th with Final Destination Bloodlines, including the late, great Tony Todd as the master of death, Grim Reaper's right-hand man. We haven't seen a Final Destination film since 2011, I think, was one when Final Destination 5 came out. And that was awesome. Final Destination 1 through 3, also awesome. We don't need to talk about the fourth one, but their batting average has been heretofore very, very good. They're fun. They're pulpy. They're like just Rube Goldberg meets slashers. And we've gone 15 years without with a proper, you know, continuation of this franchise. So I'm so glad this is back. And one of the few horror franchises I'm genuinely excited about each new installment of.
Yeah, I recently kind of worked my way through the Final Destinations I hadn't seen. I love this franchise as well. Final Destination 4, was that the Final Destination?
Yes.
Is that the one that was called? Okay. Yeah, I didn't hate that.
I don't hate it either, but it's just not as good
as the others.
It's just a markedly lower bar than the other four. Just like a noticeable drop in quality. At least when I rewatched all five, I noticed like, oh, this one feels like
that's different. That's the race, right? The car race at the beginning.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah, yeah. Because
that's how you define the final destinations by the movie.
Right. The plane crash, logging truck, roller coaster, racetrack, and then the bridge in Vancouver.
Yeah. There you go. All right. That's our first official wild card picked. There are some other movies coming out in May, believe it or not, including Thunderbolts.
Asterisk.
Whatever that means. There is a Lilo and Stitch movie coming out in May. The aforementioned Karate Kid Legends has moved its way to May. Both Ralph Macchio and Jackie Chan in that. Supposedly it takes place 3 years after the final season of Cobra Kai. So it is all now in continuity. The bring in Jackie Chan and all the Karate Kid movies are now in the same universe. So that's interesting. Mike Flanagan has a movie called The Life of Chuck that looks really, really interesting to me.
The cast on that is insane, by the way.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, it's wild. And then I want to mention Michel Gondry, who I've enjoyed many of Gondry's films, has a movie coming out called Golden that has an absolutely stacked cast as well. And I think it's a musical. So, like, bring it on. Unless I misread that. But yeah, Golden looks really interesting to me as well. So yeah, some stuff coming out in May. On to June. The summer is upon us. Andrew, what is your official pick for June?
For June, my official pick is F1.
All right.
I am so excited for this movie. This is the newest film by Joseph Kosinski, who we know from such phenomenal movies like Top Gun Maverick, Only the Brave, Tron Legacy, Oblivion.
He's got the sauce, as the kids say.
Yeah, mm-hmm. He really does. It stars Brad Pitt, Javier Bardem, Kerry Condon, Simone Ashley. I mean, it's about F1, and it's the same guy who did Top Gun Maverick. That's all you needed to tell me. And I'm not even that big of a racing guy, but I love racing movies. Racing movies are really good because they know how to film it.
This was my pick for Chadoon as well. And I know he's just going to shoot the hell out of it. Like, we're going to get IMAX cameras like right under the wheel wells and stuff. And that's going to be a movie to watch on the biggest, loudest screen you can. Comes out on June 27th. Well, so right in the height of summer. That'll be great.
Says filmed for IMAX only in theaters. That's fantastic. I didn't see the IMAX until you said it. Now,
Of course, he's not going to do this on like 35. He's going to shoot it 70 full mat IMAX frames. He probably wrecked a few cameras while filming, and that's exciting for me.
Well, I will make it unanimous.
Nice.
You give me all the movies in June. I'm putting in F1. I want to see what Kosinski is doing with this. I mean, I'm a huge Brad Pitt fan. I think he does really interesting, fun work. So yeah, I'm pumped about this one as well. Any wild cards in June? All right, Andrew.
I am going to go with 28 Years Later.
Danny Boyle.
Yes, and that is the main reason why I am excited for this. Don't get me wrong, 28 Weeks Later was good, but they're bringing back Danny, man. And I think that 28 Days Later is like one of the best horror films ever made.
It's up there. It was a genre defining moment. Like, it completely redid zombie cinema in a way that, you know, we hadn't seen since the 70s. Like, it completely turn that on its head, and I'm right there with you. This is one of my honorable mentions for June.
Yeah. Stars Aaron Taylor Johnson, Jodie Comer, Cillian Murphy, Ralph Fiennes. Cillian Murphy coming back. Excited about that. I'm excited to get the crap scared out of me. It's going to be great.
I didn't enjoy 28 Days Later that much. I don't know if it's because I came to it too late and had high expectations. I mean, it's clearly a well-made film. I'm not saying it's not. It's just not my kind of movie, I guess. So I had a little bit of trouble getting into it. So not necessarily excited for this one either. I also have a wild card in June.
Yeah, but you do. I knew it.
Anybody who has watched more, listened to more than three episodes of this show knows what I'm about to throw in the wild card category, and that is Elio, Pixar's new movie. When Pixar makes an original film, I am pumped. Now, they make great sequels. They really do. Their sequels have been good. But I'm so glad they continue to turn out original material, because it's some of the best movies of the year when they do. Elio is directed by a few people. They have team directors, but Domi Shi is one of them. And Domi Shi has directed some great stuff at Pixar already. So I'm excited to see what Elio is. And I know nothing. I don't need to know a thing. I'm excited to go in and see what story Pixar has to tell me. So that is one of my wild cards.
Also one of your wild cards.
Yes, it is one of my wild cards.
Oh, I thought you meant like for this month, like you were doubling down.
All three of my wild cards are in June. My next wild card is from the world of John Wick, Ballerina. No, that is not one of my wild cards.
Okay.
But that does come out in June, supposedly. Is John Wick going to be in this movie?
Yes, which is why it is one of my wild cards.
you didn't raise your hand. I'm sorry. I thought you were...
I was deciding whether I wanted to piggyback on the Elio, which I'm excited for, but I think I'm more excited to see a fifth entry in the John Wick franchise. The other four have been so consistently excellent. John Wick 4, I think, was my second favorite of the year. John Wick 2 was my favorite of that year, and their quality hasn't declined at all. So if this spinoff with Ana de Armas can be half as decent, I'm going to love it, and I'm excited for it. I don't know that I'll see it before F1, but I think this is probably going to be top of mind for me in the summer if I have a free weekend.
Yes. John Wick coming back to the movies to completely undermine John Wick 4 and make that movie terrible.
I think it might be a prequel. Yes. It might not actually. We'll see, though.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Fair enough. All right. How to Train Your Dragon has a live action adaptation coming out. I could not be less interested in that. What are we doing? Like, this is going to be Lion King all over again. Like, it just,
oh, it'll
I can
make just, money.
I can feel it. Yes, it's going to make a ton of money, and it's going to annoy me. I think it comes out the same day as Elio. That also annoys me for whatever reason.
Oh, it does. That's not even counter-programming. You guys are shooting yourselves in the foot. Oh, why would they do that?
Somebody's going to budge there, I think. I think Pixar has to budge there, unfortunately, just based on, you know, no IP versus existing IP. But
I don't. That doesn't make any sense to me. When the rest of the month are all adult films, like 28 Years Later and Megan and John Wick, like pick those weekends. You need that family counter programming. Don't put two family films on the same day. That's just basic math.
Yeah. Yeah. Megan 2.0 comes out, speaking of IP, also in June.
At Verizon, anyone can trade in their old phone for a new one on us with Unlimited Ultimate, which means everyone in your family could get a new phone and stay on your family plan, keeping you close.
Hey, Mom, you seen my toothbrush?
Yeah, I'm almost done with it.
Oh, maybe too close. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
On to July. All right. Let's take a look at July here. We've got, I'll kick us off this time. Fantastic Four First Steps is my most anticipated film. If you put all these movies in front of me, I'm going to pick the Fantastic Four movie because it really does feel like we're starting to get to the place where Marvel's like, okay, trust us again. Okay, ready? Here we go. And I am very, very interested to see how they pull this off. Unfortunately for them, the perfect Fantastic Four movie already exists. It's called The Incredibles. And so they have a lot to live up to. But we'll see how they go with this one. John, what about you?
I'm going to go in a different but parallel direction, similar in that it is a make-or-break superhero film. That would be for the other franchise. James Gunn's Superman opens on July 11th. The trailer dropped this week of recording right before Christmas, and Andrew, I'm sure you watched it a bunch. I watched it clean through like three or four times, and I love the optimism, the hope, the music, the retextured Hans Zimmer version of John Williams' classic theme. All of that got the emotions and the feels swelling once again, and I am so excited to see Superman in, and not to kind of dump all over Snyder's Superman, which I really enjoyed Man of Steel, but I think I want to get back to that like hopeful, optimistic boy from Smallville who just wants to make a difference. And it looks like Gunn has that intention in mind. And I've loved everything James Gunn has done. So having him sort of swap allegiances and go over to DC is just also piqued my curiosity, just from how is this going to do? How well is this new cinematic universe going to work? This is a complete reset for them. And a lot is riding on it. But I suspect, given the anticipation and the excitement, then anyone under 40 that's a guy is going to line up to see this one. So I trust it'll make a lot of money.
Yeah.
Let's hope we like it.
Andrew, what's your official pick for July?
I am going to go with Smurfs not Jurassic movie? Park.
Really?
No, I'm going to go with Fantastic Four.
Nice. All right.
With Superman as one of my wild cards.
There you go.
And Superman as a wild card. Superman for me is the movie I'm most anticipating out of the entire year that didn't make my list. It would have been my fourth wild card for sure. I'm really excited to see what James Gunn does with this. There are things about the Superman character that are very appealing to me that just I haven't really seen a lot of based
lately.
On
right.
The post Christopher Reeve Superman. So yeah, it'll be interesting.
The American way.
Yeah. Also coming out in July, Jurassic World Rebirth. I am very curious about this.
I'm curious, but not anticipating.
I'm anticipating it.
There's some good things
put
with
it in
this.
Right now for sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Scarlett Johansson, right?
Yeah.
And it's kind of a
Gareth Edwards.
Yeah, Gareth Edwards doing it. It's a refresh. It's kind of, I don't know anything about the plot. Don't need to, but just like it's kind of a fresh start for the franchise. Dinosaurs on the big screen are fun, man. They just are. It's hard, it's hard to mess that up. So yeah, I'm excited for Rebirth. See what happens there. All right. On to August.
Yeah, actually, my wild card, right. just to chalk it on the board, was Fantastic Four, by the way.
Oh, okay. All right.
I'll echo everything you guys said
on there for you. All right. So that's two wild cards. No, that's your final wild card, right, John? So you're out of wild cards. Andrew,
yes.
You've got one left, I believe.
Uno.
One left. All right. And I have two left. Okay. On to August. Andrew, kick us off.
Well, I honestly only saw one movie in here that I was kind of excited for, and that's Naked Gun.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm with you. That is my choice as well.
I mean, it's Akiva Schaffer, who I love. I love The Lonely Island. So seeing The Lonely Island's kind of version of The Naked Gun, starring Liam Neeson.
Perfect casting.
Yes, because the thing that made Leslie Nielsen so good was he was a straight man, and he played the straight man so perfectly, and he kind of got a little bit more slapsticky as it progressed down the Naked Gun way. But if you look at that first Naked Gun and Airplane, he plays the straight man, and that's what makes it so funny. And I think Liam Neeson can do the same thing.
Yeah, I think the casting's perfect, and not just because their names sound almost identical.
Yes.
that is absolutely
true. My pick as well. So my pick as well. I am very, very curious about how parody can come back. Because it's been so long since we've really seen true parody, probably since the Scary Movies, petered out, since we've really seen parody attempted. And if you do it right, it can really work. It really can. So we'll see how this generation takes to it.
So I tweeted a year and a half ago in mid-2023, after his hilarious cameo in Ted, Life's Too Short, and his turn in A Million Ways to Die in the West, it is genuinely upsetting to me that Liam Neeson forewent comedy, more comedy roles in favor of a dozen mid-tier action films. And I just want Liam Neeson to enter his Leslie Nielsen phase already, because Leslie was a dramatic actor who very late in life switched to comedy. I'm like, I just want Liam to make that same turn. He can be very, very funny. If you've watched him in that sketch with Ricky Gervais where he's like, I love making lists. And he's so good at playing that completely deadpan straight. So a year later, when they announced that this movie is actually happening with the guys from Lonely Island resurrecting one of the funniest parody trilogies ever made, I was over the moon at the announcement, not just because I called it a year earlier, just because I wanted this to exist, and I had a small part in kind of willing it into that place. But this is one of my most anticipated of the whole year. I can't wait. I so hope it's good, because if it's not, I'll be devastated.
I hope so too. I hope they really figure it out. I'm assuming no wild cards. I'm assuming your last wild card isn't in the month of August, since you said Naked Gun was the only one that you were slightly interested in. I will also mention Paul Thomas Anderson has not Paul W.S. Anderson, Paul Thomas Anderson. The good one, the good PTA, the good one. Has a movie coming out in August.
Oh, that's so sad.
Am I wrong?
Starring Leonardo DiCaprio, called The Battle of Bacton, that I am really, really curious about. Nobody 2 comes out in August, which I'm also curious about. And Freakier Friday, I'm telling you, it could be interesting, could be fun, bringing back Lindsay and Jamie Lee. I don't know.
It's on my list of shame.
The original. Check it out. It's fun.
And The Bad Guys 2, which I think is also probably going to be a good family film in the middle of summer.
Yeah, yeah. So there's some stuff in August. September, on the other hand, crickets. So let's take a look at September. John, you get to kick us off. What is your official pick for September?
This was tricky, because I'll be honest, there's only right now like 6 movies on the calendar. The Conjuring Last Rites, Light of the World, which has almost no info, Downton Abbey adaptation, a movie Him from Justin Tipping, The Bride by Maggie Gyllenhaal, and Saw 9 and Gabby's Dollhouse, the movie. Gabby's Dollhouse is one I'm sure my 5-year-old is going to love. My pick for this month is Maggie Gyllenhaal's directorial debut. She's also writing and producing the film. Jesse Buckley, Christian Bale, Penelope Cruz, and Peter Sarsgaard and Annette Bening are all in it. And I think that cast, and I think her involvement, she's always been a very sort of artist-first creator. She's definitely has a lot of integrity as a performer, and I trust that if this is her singular vision as writer, director, producer, it will be at the very least something unique and something different. And with little other information to go off of, I got to pick that for my September movie.
I'm picking it as well, and just I think you said directorial debut. Yeah. She did direct The Lost Daughter, which is an amazing film. She proved herself with The Lost Daughter that she can really direct, and I highly recommend that movie. I'm really excited about this. Like, it's the only one in September that I'm excited about. Well, I have a soft spot in my heart for Downton Abbey. I do. I've loved the Downton Abbey movies, but man, I actually am genuinely excited for this movie. Christian Bale and Jesse Buckley playing the Frankensteins. I mean,
Oh yeah, I didn't even mention what the synopsis was about.
Yeah,
and that's probably the most interesting. It's an update on The Bride of Frankenstein from 1935, which is a very fun film, very good film.
So yeah, I'm very curious what Maggie will do with that. So that's my pick as well. What about you, Andrew?
I'm going to go with it as well, even though it's a musical. I'm going to pick it.
Well, there we go. There's another check in its box for me.
Sci-fi musical monster film, like that is a mix right there.
Directed by Maggie Gyllenhaal.
Yep.
That's starring Christian Bale. I mean, just write the checks. It's going to be amazing.
It's the one gleaming light in the darkness of September. Because everything else... Well, you said Downton Abbey, but I haven't seen a second of the show, so... I've watched
every episode of the show and watched both the movies and have enjoyed them all very, very much. That property knows what it is, and there's something about that that is attractive to me, because it's like when I go to a Downton Abbey sequel, I know what I'm getting, and I'm going to sit there and enjoy it. I'm excited about that.
Not to derail us for too long, but do we have any theories as to why September is always consistently overlooked by movie studios? Is that sort of a chicken before the egg, where people don't go to the movies, so they don't release them there, or is it they don't release movies then, which is why people don't go? Because I feel like it might be the latter. Like, if they released better movies, I think more people would go to the theater then.
I think you might be right, but until Hollywood gets it out of their head that seasonal strategy is the way to go, that it's always going to be that way. In other words, what I'm saying is, I think culture might be changing a little bit in that it doesn't matter anymore when a movie comes out, both for how much money it can make at the box office, and also how many awards it can win. You know, Everything Everywhere All at Once won all the Oscars. It came out in the spring, you know. Mario, I forget what its release date was, but April, it wasn't in the summer. And it, you know, yeah, and it made billions of dollars.
And the same thing with Black Panther. That came out like Black History Month. Mm-hmm. It came out in February. And everyone's like, well, February's never. And it made $800 million, like one of the highest domestic grossing films of all time.
But, and for good reason, for audience trend reasons, the theory has been, you know, when kids are out of school is the best time to release your big stuff, because then families can go get out of the summer heat, you know, go see a movie. But I think it is changing. And then it's just that dead space in the calendar between blockbusters and awards. That's what it is. And so it just, everything dies that month. But yeah, I think you're right. I think strategically someone could really take advantage. I think A24 does a pretty good job of taking advantage of September sometimes. They'll throw something in there every year that
looking at the calendar here, I suspect that the Conjuring Last Rites or Saw 11 will probably do really good numbers, because they kind of have that wide open slate there. Not a lot of competition.
That's true. We haven't mentioned the horror stuff either. Yeah. Speaking of horror films, let's go to October, where none of my choices are horror films, which is not a surprise. John, what do you got? What's your official choice for the month of October?
Apologies if I mispronounced this, but my pick is Tron Ares, right? A-R-E-S?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Is the long gestating threequel to the 80s Tron film. I loved the Tron Legacy with Jeff Bridges and can't remember the other guy in it, but it was great. The original Tron is okay. I think the update with all the Daft Punk music is even better. And if they can kind of continue that, like every 20 years, let's come out with a good Tron film, this could be good. I don't know a lot about it, but there's also not a lot in October that I even recognize. So this kind of gets my pick by default. I am kind of excited about it, but I wouldn't say hugely anticipating.
All right. Andrew, what's your pick?
Doubling down on Tron Ares. Great cast. Jodie Turner-Smith, Jeff Bridges coming back, Gillian Anderson, Evan Peters, Jared Leto, Greta Lee. Yeah. I love the Tron world. I just wish that Daft Punk would come back just to do the soundtrack again.
That'd be great, right?
Because in my opinion, and I know it's a very biased opinion because of my love for Daft Punk, but I do think that the Tron Legacy soundtrack is the best like scored soundtrack for any movie ever.
Any movie ever. That is very high. I would probably put it in my like top 15 or 20, but it is exceptional. So that's not too far off base.
Yeah. Well, like I said, highly biased.
I will zig a little bit to the zag. The movie I would most be interested to see is Antoine Fuqua's Michael. This is his Michael Jackson biopic, and I am a sucker for musical biopics. So that, you know, already has, you know, that have that going on for me. And this interests me because I'm really curious how they're going to handle this one.
Yes.
He's come out and said that he wants it to be nuanced, that he, you know, doesn't want it to be defined by any one thing, but that he's also not going to ignore anything. And that sounds like an impossible task, if you ask me. So I am curious how that all shakes down. My understanding is there's already controversy before the movie comes out, which of course there is because people love controversy. There are few figures in pop culture as large as Michael Jackson, and this could be a very interesting look into who he is. I saw the MJ stage show in LA when I was there last year and really, really enjoyed it. I think if this is done right, it could be spectacular. You know, I think you mentioned with Mel Gibson, art and artist separation, you know, that kind of thing. I don't blame anyone for making their own choices about what they're comfortable listening to, watching, you know, buying from, whatever it might be. But I too have it's pretty easy for me to separate the two for some reason. I don't know what it is. I don't feel like when I listen or watch a piece of art that I'm supporting the views and habits and actions of everybody who created that art, you know, whether it be the singer, the producer, the actors, the grip, I don't know. I guess it's probably because I don't know how to draw that line. So my brain just instinctively doesn't draw that line. And so, I mean, add to that that I also am always aware that despite reporting and things that are said, I never know exactly what the truth is to the letter. So there's always an element of nuance there as well. So all that to say, I'm really, really excited about the Michael biopic.
Yeah, another thing you didn't even mention is Michael's 28-year-old nephew, Jafar Jackson, is playing him in the film. And the fact that we're going to get an actual Jackson kid playing Michael is that feels more faithful to me. It feels more intentional. And the fact that they got permission, I'm guessing, from his family and estate, I think means that it won't be shameless. It won't be sort of, you know, a paparazzi witch hunt to unlock every little gremlin. It's going to be about his success as well as his failures. But I am interested. The fact that Jafar is attached is like, oh, okay, this is way more interesting than just an impersonation. It's an actual family member. And is this the type of movie that might have an accompanying soundtrack, a greatest hits of Jackson's music done and sung by Jafar? Because if they go that route, like they did with Bohemian Rhapsody or Rocket Man, look out, because that could be a huge hit this summer or October anyway.
I actually had the opposite reaction to the Jafar Jackson thing.
Interesting.
Which is, I saw how Bohemian Rhapsody was corrupted, in my opinion, by Queen being the ones producing it. And I think there is an element of when you listen, if Antoine Fuqua can remain above that and is just casting somebody in the family, but when it has like the support of the family, then I'm just like, well, then it's not going to be as
unbiased.
You know, honest and unbiased as it could and probably should be. I just, that's what we've seen so much of lately, are these, you know, biopics that are done by the people who benefit from them at the end of the day. And it's just, I don't know, it starts to get a little bit annoying and cloying to me. So I still think he can do it, and I hope he does. But yeah, I did have a little bit of the opposite reaction.
That is a good point.
I just want to enjoy in this space all Michael Jackson's music before we get to the point where AI Michael Jackson is creating new music in the future. And, you know, I'm just enjoying the space where I know what really is and isn't Michael Jackson music. All right. That is October. I don't think there was much. Aziz Ansari has another movie coming out, which might be interesting. So we'll see what his follow-up movie is like. I think it's called Good Fortune. That kind of took my interest a little bit.
A couple of sequels, Mortal Kombat 2 and The Black Phone 2. which is, I don't know, that's something for you.
All right, we're heading towards the end of the year. November, things are heating up again. I'll kick us off on this one. I am fresh off the Wicked vibes, so my official choice is Wicked, colon, for good. I think they've officially decided to call it, instead of part two. So I wonder if the first movie is just now called Wicked? If it's titled Wicked, or if it's titled Wicked Part One? Come
Live,
on,
die,
figure
repeat.
About Hollywood.
Who knows?
But I am pumped for the conclusion to the Wicked movie. I loved Wicked so much and cannot wait to see how that finishes up. I have not seen the stage play, so I am unaware of what is in store in the next movie. So that is my official pick. Andrew, what's yours?
I am going to go with Edgar Wright's The Running Man.
Yeah,
me
you
too.
Are.
So many things about this movie just scream, Andrew, watch me right now. Edgar Wright is the big one. Stephen King is the other one, and Glenn Powell is the other one. Just so many things are, I'm going, yes, okay, let's do it.
Yep. Let's see. You said, John, it was your pick as well. Did you want to talk about it?
I'm right there with you, Andrew. I think the fact that we're getting a remake, an update of the Arnold Schwarzenegger picture from 87, Edgar Wright at the helm, is going to infuse a lot of fun, just great, witty comedy and like fast editing and great. He's always been really dynamic with his style. I love his work. And Glenn Powell is clearly the it guy right now. I'm excited to see whatever project he takes on. And the rest of the cast here as well. William H. Macy, Lee Pace, Amelia Jones. Like, all right, you have my attention, guys. This is going to be...
Josh Brolin, yeah.
Yeah, this is going to be very interesting. And the 1987 film is kind of a schlocky, fun Schwarzenegger pick. And I hope they retain some of that dystopian dark comedy, because it's fun. I've always said, and I think we all in agreement, we need more remakes of like mid-tier mediocre films. And Running Man is not one of Schwarzenegger's better movies, but I think it's potential in the premise and the concept to make it into a really great film. And if anyone could do it, I think Edgar Wright and Glenn Powell could.
I hate to, you know, be the bearer of bad news, but it's not really an adaptation of the Arnold Schwarzenegger movie. It's an adaptation of the book, which is totally different from the movie.
Well, there
this
you go.
This is I'm sorry to be that guy, but the book is more about one guy gets chosen to survive. I think it's 24 hours where the entire world hunts him, and he has to stay alive. He's the running man.
So you're saying the Schwarzenegger film is just not a very accurate adaptation.
It's not really, no.
All right. Well,
hopefully
even better.
They changed the ending of the book, because the ending of the book, a guy flies a plane into a skyscraper. So
yeah, okay.
Yeah, I would think they would change that.
Yeah.
Although, what do I know? It's, you know, it's been 23 years.
Yeah.
You know, like, how soon did they start making World War II movies? I don't, you know, or I don't know.
During the war.
So nobody's going to pick Now You See Me 3, huh?
No.
But I do have a wild card for this month if we're doing that.
All right.
Yeah,
sure.
Do it. What's yours?
Dan Trachtenberg, Predator Wildlands. I don't care what anybody says.
Badlands.
What did I say?
Wildlands.
I meant Badlands. I apologize. Badlands. Predator Badlands. It's a World War I Predator movie. Okay. And it's directed again by Dan Trachtenberg. Okay.
Yeah.
Let's do it. I kind of have the same feeling I do with this as I do with The Running Man. Like, a lot of good things. Just put it in front of me now and I'll watch it.
Yep, that was my wild card as well. My second wild card was Predator Badlands. And for me to choose a Predator movie,
I'm surprised by that.
We've converted you, Aaron.
Listen, I have made no qualms about my fandom for Dan Trachtenberg. I have followed the guy since he was part of a three-man video podcast called The Totally Rad Show back in the day. And to see him making big Hollywood movies now almost feels like a friend from high school made it big or something. Like, you know, because I used to listen to him every week when he was just some dude in a garage talking about movies with two other dudes in a garage. so it's been really fun to see. He was always so smart about the way he processed film and the way he thought about it, and that has shown in the Cloverfield Lane movie that he did, in so many of the other projects he did. Some of his Black Mirror stuff is amazing. He's directing an episode of Stranger Things this year too. I'm pumped at what Dan Trachtenberg does. I trust him so completely to do almost an anthology sequel and not a direct sequel, because I know that's what he's passionate about. He's like, we don't need to tell the same story over and over again. Let's find a new story.
That's why Tim Cloverfield Lane works so well.
Yeah, exactly.
Also, I'm seeing on his Wikipedia here that he is currently developing a TV series adaptation of Waterworld, and that sounds great.
Okay. I am so down for that.
Absolutely. You genius. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
Great.
That was one of my official wild cards. Nice. Also out in November is Zootopia 2. Okay. I guess we're doing another Zootopia movie. Bring it on. I'll watch the sloth, say things slowly again.
You're
gonna
start a howl.
Yorgos Lanthimos has another Emma Stone, Jesse Plemons movie coming out called Begonia. Be interested to see that. And that is really all in November that I wanted to talk about. On to December. John, what is your most anticipated movie of December? Oh, I wonder. Tell us what it is.
No surprise. Avatar, Fire and Ash, third film in James Cameron's magnum opus. Cannot wait. I will be lined up right in the middle of the Furniture Stores IMAX theater on December 19th to see this one. I love Avatar 1. I loved Avatar 2 even more. I think, the most misunderstood and underappreciated sci-fi franchises of the century. This for me is up there with like Star Wars and Trek as genre defining cinema for sci-fi. Like, this is on parallel to Trek and Star Wars. And I hope that after Trek. The Way of Water, Star Trek, that after The Way of Water, I think, helped convert some people over to the Avatar bandwagon, I hope Fire and Ash really locks them all in. Like, oh no, this guy can cook. Give him more money. Give him $1 billion to do the next two. I'm so excited for this. Love these films.
Isn't he giving himself the money? Isn't he?
Whatever. It doesn't matter where it comes from. Just do it. Give him more money.
Cameron, I implore you, give yourself some more money to make these movies.
Seventh degree black belt James Cameron.
Yeah. I echo everything you said. It's so funny to me that you could call a science fiction property that has two of the three most money-making movies of all time underappreciated. But it is somehow. I don't understand it. It's backlash. It's haters gonna hate. It's those things.
Well, it's like the Kansas City Chiefs syndrome, right? Like, people hate what's popular and successful. And it's like, yeah, Patrick Mahomes is 15-1, so people hate him because he's good. Like, I'm sorry. I'm sorry that Avatar and Avatar 2 made $5 billion collectively, but that doesn't change the fact that they're also really fun movies to watch. So, I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm rooting for it. To make another $3 billion.
I am too. And I am very, very excited because Cameron always knows how to tell such a specific, interesting visual story. He uses 3D as a storytelling avenue. He uses high frame rate as a storytelling avenue. He sees technology for its ability to tell stories better, not just as some display gimmick of technological advancement. I'm pumped for Fire and Ash. I cannot wait to see where this story goes next. It was very clear for me from the second one, from Way of Water, that he is setting up big storytelling movements in this series. So I'm excited to see what those next movements are in Fire and Ash. So that's my choice as well. Andrew, what about you?
You guys have said everything I could possibly say about Fire and Ash, so ditto. I don't expect this to be the technological advancement that we saw from Avatar 1 to Avatar 2, just because of the amount of time that hasn't been as spacious as from 1 to 2. but I do expect to see some outstanding visuals. I am excited to jump back into Pandora. Yeah, even though I wasn't as up on number two as you guys were, I still really liked it. It's just, I don't know, it just didn't hit me as well as you two. Maybe I'm in that underappreciating category you're talking about.
That's fine. Hopefully the next one wins you even over. You know, that's the hope.
And that's the thing. Like, I'm really excited about number three. We're going to be talking about our most anticipated movies, like our top three here in a second. And I have a feeling it's going to get brought up again.
I have a feeling you're right. All three of us pick it for December. I think I'm the only one with a wild card left. My wild card will not be in December. It will be for an undated movie that we'll talk about here in a second. Coming out in December, Anaconda.
Yeah,
I don't know if this is a remake.
This has my curiosity. It's Jack Black and Paul Rudd.
Yeah.
So are they going? Is it going to be a comedy? Or are they going to like really lean into
the? Clearly.
I don't even like the original Anaconda, but it's stupid fun for what it is. And it knows what it is. Yeah. It knows that it's a really kind of genre film. Like, it's kind of a culty kind of like monster of the week style story. And yeah, Jack Black and Paul Rudd, when I saw them do that little TikTok announcement last week saying, hey, we're going to make an Anaconda film. Like, well, I'm sorry, what? Okay, cool. It comes out in 12 months. All right, fine. I'll probably check that out. I'm very interested.
The Safdies have a new one coming out called Marty Supreme. Timothy Chalamet starring in a Safdie movie. Sounds interesting to me.
Ooh.
Love the choices Chalamet is making. I think he is the new Leo. I think he proves that with each movie. And Paul Feig. I think it's Feig. The Housemaid also is interesting to me as well. Those are December. All right, undated movies. I could have picked three wild cards for the undated films as far as I could tell them. So let me run down. I guess I'll just start with my official wild card from the undated movies. Ryan Johnson, a new Benoit Blanc mystery, Wake Up Dead Man, is supposed to come out in 2025. My guess is that will be towards the end of the year, if it does indeed make 2025. But man, sign me up for every Benoit Blanc movie ever to the end of time. The first two were so good, and I am convinced Ryan Johnson will continue bringing us amazing. At what point does Ryan Johnson become synonymous or in the conversation with like mystery writer, like Agatha Christie? Like, he's writing these mysteries. You know what I mean? Like, he's just, if he writes a third incredible mystery like this, you kind of got to start thinking, like, you got to mention him with, you know, Arthur Conan Doyle and, you know, Agatha Christie and, you know.
You are not wrong. And that, I think that's something that goes overlooked with his movies is that, yeah, he's also an incredible writer. And Knives Out is one of the sharpest, cleverest, twistiest whodunits ever made, because it's not a whodunit, it's a how did it. Like, we know right at the jump who did it. And then the whole movie, we're unpacking, like, why and how does that work? And it's a brilliant, I hate to use this word because it was over critical of him with last year, but it's a brilliant subversion of that genre. And he knows how to kind of play with the tools in his toy box really well. And I did not know this was coming out next year, but you have immediately got me very excited for it.
So that is my official third wild card. Other undated movies, again, many of these could be pushed, probably will be pushed, but right now it looks like they would come out in 2025. Ari Aster has a new movie coming out called Eddington. He's teaming with Joaquin Phoenix again for that one. Always curious about what Ari Aster is going to bring. Guillermo del Toro has a Frankenstein movie that is supposed to come out in 2025. So GDT's Frankenstein certainly has my attention peaked. Wes Anderson has a movie called The Phoenician Scheme. I'm always up for a new Wes Anderson film. I find him to be one of the most interesting and unique directors of our time.
And really consistent, too.
Very consistent, yeah. Spike Lee, speaking of amazing directors, is doing a homage/remake of Kurosawa's High and Low called Highest to Lowest. This is supposed to come out in 2025 as well. That is definitely very, very interesting. And Celine Song has a movie called Materialist coming out. Now, Past Lives was her debut. Materialist is the name of the movie. Stars Dakota Johnson, Chris Evans, and Pedro Pascal. And if Past Lives is any indication, this will be one to watch as well. So... So lots of interesting stuff possibly coming out in 2025.
So I finally knocked off High and Low off my list of shame just like a few weeks ago, and late to the party on this one because it's a Kurosawa film, so everybody already knows it's brilliant, but it truly is incredible. And I remember thinking while watching it, why haven't we seen any update of this? This came out in the 60s. This is a 62-year-old film at this point. Like, how have we not done... Mm-hmm. And yeah, to have Denzel Washington and Jeffrey Wright in an update, like that could be pretty good.
Yeah. Yep. It sure could. All right. It's time to pick our official picks. We will do our top three. We'll go number three to number one. Andrew, start us off. What's your number three most anticipated movie of the year?
My number three most anticipated movie of the year is going to go to Mickey 17.
All right. Understandable. Jonathan.
My number three, I will go with Naked Gun.
Ooh.
I like that.
I love that choice.
Of all the
movies that come out this year, they're all in front of you. You're like, you know what? There's only two in the entire year I would put in before Naked Gun.
And honestly, I almost put it higher. I love parody. Naked Gun is like a formative comedic foundation for my personality. This and Airplane, I have a lot riding on it. Again, it needs to be good though. It can't just happen.
Yeah.
It needs to also happen well.
My number three is Fantastic Four First Steps. That is my number three most anticipated. Andrew, what's your number two?
Oh man. My issue right now is my number two and my number one are so close together in my anticipation that I can kind of just throw them up at
They're both fine. In front of you.
They're both
one of them's going in the garbage can, and the other one's going in your Blu-ray player.
The other one will be burned forever. Two, you'll never see it.
Number two, I'm going to go with F1.
F1 is number two. Good choice. Good choice. John, what's your number two?
I'll go with Mission Impossible for my number two.
All right. The Final Reckoning. My number two is Wake Up Dead Man, the Rian Johnson mystery. I refuse to call it by its full title because the way they are titling these makes no sense. Why do we keep saying Knives Out in the title? You idiots.
Knives Out or Knives Out Mystery.
Yes, exactly. Wake Up Dead Man is my number two. And your number one most anticipated movie of the year, Andrew, what is it?
Like I said, it was a close call, but I have to give it to The Running Man.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
John.
I'm going to slot Avatar, Fire and Ash, as my number one. I think that's the movie I will pre-reserve tickets for. I will make a day out of it. I will go early to get a good seat. I think everything else, if I didn't watch it opening night, I'd be okay with it. This is a movie I will be there front and center. And if they do any type of IMAX marathon of the other two films, sign me up for that 9-hour experience, because seeing those on the big screen really is, unfortunately, the only way to experience them. So I'm hoping they do a re-release too, and I'll be there all day. I would love it.
Did you watch the HFR adapted original Avatar?
When it came out right before the sequel, I did, and it was excellent. And genuinely, Avatar 2009's Avatar was the best looking movie I saw in theaters all year when they re-released. Like it looked like a 15-year-old movie looks better than anything else that came out in 2023. Like it was remarkable how good that held up.
What was the FPS on the HFR?
Well, it's variable. So he's doing this technology. It's a variable high frame rate. And so what it does is during the more like steady dialogue, walking around a room, just kind of talking scenes, it's just a regular 29:4 or whatever, film.
I think it's 24 and 48. I want to say.
Yeah, 24. That's what it is. 24. Yeah, 29 is TV. Sorry. Yeah, yep. 20. It's 24. But then, like, when action kicks up, it'll kick up to 48. I think it went higher than that. I think he went up to 60 on some of those scenes.
He's crazy. He'll do whatever he wants.
So basically, he's trying to soften the soap opera effect for people, because a lot of that happens when the action dies down and it's like, oh, we're just looking at people in rooms and it's too clear. Like, it's too visually, pristine. That's a audience thing. Personally, I would love for everything to be in high frame rate, because it's a more accurate view, like it's looking more through a window. But there are a lot of people that like the look of 24 frames a second, because it's what they're used to. You know, to them, that is the movies. Movies happen at 24 frames a second.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's an interesting thing he's doing with the variable frame rate.
I know this is kind of out of nowhere, but when you went and saw Gemini Man, what was the FPS on that?
120. I went and saw it 120. Ooh. Yeah. Yeah, it was Neat. It was insanely awesome. I loved it so much. I am so for HFR. I think it is the next way to shoot things in a way that looks, spectacular. So I watch.
There's not a theater in the world that can play.
Well, but
it.
I watch Gemini Man at home in high frame rate all the time.
Mm.
What's the at-home frame rate?
I think it's 60. I think the disc 60. Is 60, and you have to, of course, have a TV that has that kind of refresh rate. Mm-hmm. But most modern TVs have a 120 refresh rate at this point, so at least. Anyways, I'm talking a little outside of my expertise, but I have looked at it enough to kind of fall in love with the technology. And I should say, when I say all the time, I've watched Gemini Man like 3 times since I got the disc, and every time I watched it in high frame rate. And I don't know that I would have watched it 3 more times if it weren't for the high frame rate. That's how much I love it. All this to say, yeah, Avatar, Fire and Ash is my most anticipated movie of the year. And it is one of those things where it's like, part of the anticipation of it is like, I know I want to find the best possible theater to see it in. And so, like, I'm already thinking of like, oh, am I going to be in LA around the time it comes out? I would love to see it like a great LA, maybe at Grauman's. Grauman's has a great laser setup now. Absolutely. You know, like, where should I go watch this? So
I'm just going to, I say settle for Branson, but it's a laser IMAX theater, so I'm not settling for anything.
Yeah.
I'm going to Branson.
Yeah. No, that's absolutely part of it though. Aaron, you're right. Is part of my anticipation is I know that will be an event for me. I will like take time off of work to make sure I can go to the mm-hmm. theater on a Thursday afternoon and see that on the biggest screen in New England. It's going to be great. I'm looking forward to it. What about you? We talked a lot on this little thing, but what about number one picks? Let's not get off track.
Yeah. So now we need to pick the official. The only one that got more than one mention was Avatar. We both had it at number one.
Did you guys already give your number one picks?
Yes.
Yeah, I picked The Running Man.
Oh, that's right. I'm sorry. What about you, Aaron? Did you have
Avatar, Fire and Ash? Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yep. So there you go. It's the only one mentioned twice. Both John and I had it at number one. Andrew, I'm afraid that we're gonna have to wrestle you to the ground and make this the official most anticipated.
Hey, it was my most anticipated for December, so I do want to see it, and I would say that it's like my 5th or 6th most anticipated of the year, so I have no qualms.
Yeah. So we will make it official. The most anticipated film of 2025 for SIFPOP is Avatar, Fire and Ash. I'm not sure what would have to happen for Avatar, for an Avatar movie not to be the most anticipated movie. But maybe one will just have to be terrible. Can you imagine that, John? Can you imagine James Cameron making a terrible Avatar movie?
I can't imagine him doing anything even remotely half-assed. Like, this is a guy that, you know, everything all the time. He's all in, and he's been batting 1,000 for 40 years now. His last bad film was Piranha in 1978. Like, the guy does not miss. I'm surprised, though, that I was the only one that picked Mission Impossible. I thought for sure we'd have a few overlaps on that. But I think you picked it for your May pick. But
there's just a lot of good stuff.
Yeah. It
was probably my number 4. So, it probably just missed the list. But if you put Final Reckoning and Fantastic Four First Steps been in front of me. I'm going to watch Fantastic Four First Steps. I will, you know, I'll wait for Mission Impossible. You know, if you put Rian Johnson's Benoit Blanc Wake Up Dead Man in front of me, like, I'm going to put it in over, you know. So it's just one of those things where it's just, this might be a good year, guys. You know, I think we might be ramping back up to good movies.
I certainly hope so. The film industry could use a good not just a shot in the arm, but like a steady, consistent dose of shots in the arm. Like, we need to get Hollywood on insulin. Like, we need to get them a shot every month, because they can't just have a Deadpool and Wolverine once in July and then nothing again until November. Like, we need consistent box office totals, and a bunch of these movies seem like they're going to be big hits. Captain America is going to do huge. Mickey 17, I think, is going to do great domestic. A Mission Impossible will probably do 400-500 million. F1 might do really good numbers. Elio will always, Pixar is always dependable. And Superman is probably good. Superman and Fantastic Four, those two movies alone will make a ton of, with Jurassic World, July is going to be crazy. Like, that's a crazy month for box office totals. Yeah. Could be excited to see it all.
Yes. Any final thoughts, Andrew, from you on the 2025 looking ahead?
You know what? I'm not going to lie. Whenever I was first making my list, and maybe it was just because of the first couple months, but I was just thinking to myself, man, 2025 isn't really that exciting for me. But as we've done this show now, and like, you've talked about shows or movies that don't have release dates or ones that I hadn't heard about, I'm like, you know what? 2025 has the potential to be a really good year. And like you said earlier, there's a lot of stuff that hasn't even been announced yet.
Mm-hmm.
So, yep. Yeah, I am excited about 2025 for sure.
Yep, me too. Excited to see what 2025 holds and how many great movies we'll be able to see and talk about and hang out and chat about. That is it. We did it, guys. Woo. We did a podcast. Well done. Appreciate it. Happy holidays. We're recording this between Christmas and New Year's. So you're probably into your new year when you're listening to this, or close to it. And so, happy 2025. Hope you have an amazing time, and that movies are a part of that amazing time for you in 2025. Thanks so much for joining us today. Sif Pop is part of the Studio DNA Podcast Network. You can find out more about other shows on the network by searching Studio DNA in your podcast player. Huge thanks to Andrew for hanging out again today.
Thank you, buddy.
Huge thanks to producer Phil for producing the audio and video show.
Thanks, Phil.
Much love and gratitude to our Sif Pop members for giving monthly to make Sif Pop a real thing. Support starts at $3 a month. You can check all that out at patreon.com/SifPop. Lots of ways to connect with the podcast. Feel free to leave a comment, a rating, or a review at Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you listen. You can also email us at feedback@SifPop.com. And finally, if you're having a good time, your movie-loving friends will probably like the show too, so let them know about it and that listening is easier than comprehending. We are a quarter way through the 21st century already.
No!
We'll be back. We will be back. I'll be back next week to do my annual ballot picking for the Critics' Choice Awards. And then we'll be back in 2025 with more, and we will see you then.
Bye.
Bye.
At Verizon, anyone can trade in their old phone for a new one on us with Unlimited Ultimate, which means everyone in your family could get a new phone and stay on your family plan, keeping you close.
Hey, Mom, you seen my toothbrush?
Yeah, I'm almost done with it.
Oh, maybe too close.
Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.